Yeah, alrighty, AMA, as we do every single Wednesday at this time, you ask, we answer. Questions from Facebook, Twitter, and the text line. First question, though, comes from me, and it goes to James Seltzer.
Uh-oh.
It is an uh-oh.
It's never great. It's never, good when you do this.
So, James, now that multiple people on Twitter showed you yesterday that in the Thurgood song, there is the line.
Yes, it's apparently at the end of a long guitar solo. That's my bad.
Do I get to ask the question?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay. You going to play it today?
Sure.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because,
John, it was amazing how he was so insistent yesterday.
I just said I couldn't find it, and it wasn't in the lyrics. So that's all the best I could. I'm sitting here trying to do a radio show and listen to his song at the same time.
But it was in the lyrics.
No, not if you Google the lyrics. Yeah. It's not.
But it was in the song.
It's in the song.
Yeah, yeah.
But what I do is if I'm trying to do a radio show just for inside baseball here, so I'm listening to you talk and I got to hear, oh, Seltzer, and I got to hop on the air and listen to that at the same time, I go to the lyrics and I look at the lyrics. It's not in the official lyrics of the song. That's all I was saying.
You get the second producer involved to listen to the whole thing?
No, I didn't think about asking Lewis. I probably should have. I was trying to take it all on me. That's my fault.
I appreciate that.
Yes.
That's taking ownership. James Seltzer, what do people want to know today?
All right, let's dive in. As I got like four different versions of this question. It's the same question. It is the number one question, it seems, in the world right now. We are the last people to talk about it. So who would win? One gorilla fighting 100 men.
Oh, this is very.
So this is it for Joe, I'm guessing, because he's the one who doesn't
know. I saw this.
Okay, you saw this. This is like the biggest social media thing we've had in a while.
My
like,
son asked me it last
everyone,
night.
It's just as big a thing as we've had.
The men win. The men win, and it doesn't have to be 100 men. You just be tactical men and be smart. Smart, tactical men with some toughness can go take this gorilla down. 10 of them. Maybe five. I don't know.
No, don't get carried away. I agree with you.
Maybe five.
I think people are. So it seems like gorilla is the clear winner in the general debate. I'm with you. I think men are being underrated here. Like 100 men. What are we talking about?
I think men are being a little overrated.
You got Jordan Mailata. You got Jordan Mailata as one of the men.
Think about
if you got 100 Jordan Mailata men, and you somehow plan to sneak up on said gorilla. Grab him, hold him down with 99 people, and then the 100th man, who's Jordan Mailata sized, can rip his eyeballs out, and then what's he going to do?
Jordan Mailata.
Nothing.
Most men are not Jordan Mailata.
All right. Well, I guarantee if we go on a worldwide search, we can find 100 men who are Jordan Mailata-esque.
Well, I think Devin's point is, what if it's 100 random people?
Yeah, I think it's just be 100 men.
We can still do it with 100.
I think so, too.
I think the men win, but I also think it helps to have Mailata instead of the hammer.
Oh, well, we know the hammer. The hammer would be running the other way. The hammer, I saw a lot of memes with like people being like the last man making a deal with the gorilla. That's him. Joe's like, there's 10 of us left. I got you, gorilla. I'll help you out. Let me go.
I think the guys win, but it's an interesting question.
It's a good one. All right, let's keep it rolling. Go Birds A6. I think I know what your answer is going to be to this, Joe, knowing your familial history. But Gobers A6 asks, with the Kentucky Derby this Saturday, who has the better chance of winning a horse race as a jockey, DeCamera or Fritz?
I don't know. Does Joe get to train as a jockey and have professional jockeys come in and teach him how to better be a jockey?
It's in the blood, though. I get what you're doing here. That's good work. It's in the blood, though. You know, he's got the jockey in the
blood. I'm aware of that, but I'm talking about the timeliness of this whole thing.
It's a simple answer.
Are you going to train with professionals?
No.
Before each and every event?
Well, no, maybe yes on that. Here's the answer to this. Fritz obviously wins.
Whoa!
Because I'm not getting on a freaking horse to
be
a jockey.
Jack's too big to be a jockey.
I was
going to
pick you, Joe. I was going to say that this is one event where I might pick Joe.
This is your first win here.
Size advantage.
You can go 1-5 against Jack if we add this.
No,
Jack's too big.
I would never get on a horse for a horse race. I care too much about my life. I won't do it. I just won.
But yet you'll go down the luge and die.
Well, I bet you win a gold medal with that.
This guy thinks he could luge, but he won't get on a horse.
It's a sled. All right,
it's a sled.
Okay. Going 70 miles an hour. In a sled.
Like there's some skill with the luge.
Oh my god!
You just get
so
on the thing and
so
go.
Dead.
Should try it.
Yeah, people break their bodies doing this. Like, have you never heard of this type of stuff?
No,
exactly. All right, let's do one more here.
What?
Fake WIP listener says, What is a positive or negative quality you've noticed in other radio host professionals that you never recognized previous to being in the industry?
They live in a fantasy world where they can participate in Olympic events at an Olympic level, where they can run for the president of a country and win.
Okay, is that, yeah. is that a positive or a negative, John? I don't know which.
That's very negative. Delusional. They have delusions of grandeur. How's that?
I would say this, and I think it's evident when you're not in the industry and you're just a listener, but I think it's, for me, more evident once you're in this industry and you kind of hear shows in a different way. It's just preparation. I think it's so obvious who's prepared and who's not, and I just think you can just tell. So, you know, and I imagine a lot of listeners that resonates with them. You can just tell who's prepared and who's not. And that's a big part of, obviously, success or failure as a talk show host. And with that, AMA, we shut it down. All right, so the Phillies were prepared for the start of the game. They were prepared for portions of the game. They were not prepared for trying to close out that game effectively. It got really crazy last night. But they did pull it out in the end, courtesy of back-to-back plays at the plate, which might be the first time in Phillies history, two plays in a row at home plate, one of which they should have been out. I mean, Bohm should have been out. If the catcher catches the ball, ball game over. And, John, to the point you said earlier, we're having a whole different conversation today. With that said, there was a lot of good.
Was there. The play was there to be made.
I know.
And Alec Bohm, because of his slowness, what should have been tagged out.
No, he should have been tagged out, and the catcher missed the ball, and so he scored. And I don't rip Bohm. I mean, he's just a slow guy. He did his best to try to get home.
I mean, it wasn't that kind of rip Bohm.
No, I don't rip Bohm at all for that. By the way, he also deserves credit.
He was really slow.
Rip him for that. It's just
That is ripping him, saying he was slow. It was unbelievable how slow he was. He basically should have been tagged out.
No, I know.
We lucked out that he wasn't. Luck gave us part of why we won that game.
Well, I agree with that. Here's the other thing that hasn't been mentioned yet today, and Bohm deserves credit for this. He got on base to start that inning.
Yeah.
That's true.
I mean, my relief pitcher coupled with the defense gives up, was it three or four runs? Four runs. Right?
Four
runs. Yeah. If you miss this, because I know a lot of people waking up right now, you might not have seen this, you know, last night near the end of the game. So the Phils hold a
5-2.
Three-run lead.
5-2.
Yeah. 5-2 lead entering the top of the ninth. 5-2.
Yeah.
Like, closing in on wrapping this thing up. Four runs are given up in the top of the ninth. Now, defense had a major part in it with defensive disasters and Trey and Rojas. Okay.
Yeah.
But there's also a three-run homer, and that goes on Kirker. And even though it doesn't go on his earned runs the way it otherwise could, like, there was three different guys that had a major role in the other team scoring four runs. With that said, with maybe one of the lowest points of the season.
We gave them extra outs, though.
I get it. But with one of the lowest points in the season entering the bottom of the ninth, my team's now down a run. Citizens Bank Park is completely freaking stunned.
Dead.
Okay? Let's give Alec Bohm some credit for getting on base to start that inning. And that jump starts what ends up being two runs, unconventional style to get them. You know, one's a sack fly where you should have been out. Another's a wild pitch where Trey scores. And they win the game. So, look,
huge, because all I was thinking
massive.
Prior to that was that Johan Rojas has more home runs than Alec Bohm this season.
No, I get it.
Wow.
As soon as Rojas hit it, it's all I can think about.
A lot last night positive and a lot last night negative to react to. Your chance at 215-592-9494. Let's talk to Vernon. Good morning, Vernon.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing well, Vernon.
This is my first time calling, so a little nervous.
Thank you for calling us.
It's all good.
I was looking at the Phillies game last night, and I'm a diehard 4-for-4 guy.
Nice.
But watching the Phillies last night, Kirkring is just driving me crazy.
Mm-hmm.
It's been an issue, man. He just has not been sharp this year. And the crazy thing is his ERA won't show it that much off of last night because it was only technically one earned run. But, I mean, let's not kid ourselves. I mean,
he gave up the home run.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, he gave up the home run.
And he just hasn't been that good this year, Vernon.
He hasn't taken that step forward.
He's taken a step backwards.
Yep. Thank you.
Maybe two steps backwards.
And then you have Turner, whose defense is, I mean, my son plays Little League baseball. He's only 8 years old, and he can make that play.
Yeah.
He knows that's on second base. So it's a little frustrating. What do you think about, and I don't know if this is to be done, but what do you think about maybe Turner playing in the outfield or something like that? I mean,
Well, I think it's something they should have done in the off season. That's a tough transition in May, and they're not going to do it in May, and I don't think they're going to do it this year, but I think they should have done it. I think they are a misconstructed defensive aligned team. It's just ill-constructed, whatever the term would be. It's just Trey Turner is – look, here's the deal, Vernon. I don't know all the shortstops in baseball, so I can't tell you exactly where he ranks. But just knowing sport the way I do, I tend to think he's probably one of the 5 to 7 worst defensive shortstops of the starters. And that's a hard way to win a World Series, man. That's tough.
Position's so important, man.
Yeah. I mean, he is bad at it. Not average, not a little below average. He's a bad –
I'm off Justin Crawford, and I'm turning my attention to Aiden Miller.
Yeah, well, there's options, but they're, you know.
I know.
Vernon, give me an answer for the best speech ever in a movie.
I have Al Pacino, Any Given Sunday.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Love that answer.
The inch, what's that, Every Inch or something?
That was one of the few, like, football movie moments that I felt like, wow, they captured something there.
Yeah, that was big, man.
That was so awesome.
Yeah, that was a great answer. John, I'm convinced Seltzer will never play Scratch My Back, Baby. He's just never going to do it.
Well, Little Wing got brought up. I got to play Little Wing, you know? Yeah,
fair enough.
I'll get to you.
Hey,
I had to make John. Look at him. Look at that. Look on the YouTube how happy he is.
John is happy.
Come on.
Hope everyone's having a great start to your Wednesday. It was a roller coaster last night with the Phils, but they pulled it out. Andy Reid, 8:45 today. So we're bringing Andy on because, of course, Monday is BG Day here on WIP. And Monday night will be BG Live. BG Live Monday night, private event, which, by the way, tickets are now sold out. So nice job by our audience with grabbing those tickets while you could, which is no longer. The tickets are sold out. But it's going to be an amazing night, Monday night of next week. But also the programming here on WIP, we're going to devote, you know, I mean, unless there's some kind of crazy breaking news, we're pretty much going to devote the entire day to BG's legendary career here in Philly. Obviously, one of the more impactful Philadelphia athletes of all time. I mean, he won 2 titles and had a major hand in both, particularly the first one, major hand in the first one. So BG Day Monday, we're going to have a lot of, you know, Brandon's former players and coaches and all that on the show, one of which, of course, Andy Reid. Now, his schedule, John, as you know, because good job by you back-channeling to get this done, Andy's going to be in an OTA on Monday. So he couldn't join us on Monday live during the show. So he's like, yeah, I'll come on today. We're like, awesome. So we'll kind of kick off the Brandon Graham stuff today with the person that drafted BJ. And it was a controversial pick. You know, John, the Earl Thomas thing, that was Andy Reid's decision. Earl Thomas or Brandon Graham was
2010.
Yeah.
Yeah. Andy and Brandon were together for 3 years and the Earl Thomas thing.
Oh, that was
started.
Oh man.
And while Andy was here, Earl Thomas was excelling for the Seahawks.
I mean, he was on his way to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah,
probably will fall short because he kind of fell off. But man, for 5 or 6 years,
when did the Seahawks win their Super Bowl?
2013 was it?
Yeah, 13 and then 14 they got back but lost.
So right at the same time, Andy's leaving Philadelphia, headed to or just starting.
Yeah, the chip
at
years.
Kansas City.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Wow. So anyway, we look forward to having Andy Reid on the program. We'll do a lot of BG with him at 8:45 today. Speaking of football coaches, let's get to the Belichick thing. So, you know, we played some audio yesterday, but it's worth a revisit because the audio is just too good to not play again because there's a new development with Bill Belichick and his girlfriend from yesterday we want to get to in a moment related to an email. But before that, let's go back to Sunday on CBS Sunday Morning Show. When one of the things discussed was how Robert Kraft is not mentioned. Belichick's on a book tour right now because he's got a new book coming out. And it's like his life in football thing, which is 50 years. So it should be a fascinating book. But Robert Kraft's not in the book. Listen to how Belichick addressed Kraft not being in the book Sunday on CBS.
He's not in this book. How come?
He's not. Well, again, it's about my life lessons in football and it's really more about the ones that I've experienced directly.
He's not even in the acknowledgement section.
Correct.
Do you feel like you were treated with dignity and respect when you were let go by Robert Kraft?
Yeah, well, it was a mutual decision for us to part ways.
He said fired.
It was a mutual decision.
It really is amazing. It's amazing. It's just, you know.
Such an uncomfortable interview.
Right? I mean, it's just. So that
so
was.
So many levels.
That was so many levels. So that was one major aspect from that interview. But another was the Belichick girlfriend
just
thing.
So
right,
awful.
John?
I mean, it's just. So yeah. So the but remember, there was a pact essentially where they there was a like a legally binding situation where they did part ways. There was a mutual agreement in a court of law.
Well, it's not. Yeah, it's a document that's legal. I mean, it, basically, Belichick gets a sum of money to go away. I'm sure there's an NDA in there. You know, non-disclosure on any number of things through the years. Belichick gets money
Belichick
to go away.
Is telling the truth.
Yeah, he wasn't technically fired. It was agreed upon, so he's technically right. But you can. But it's so bizarre. I mean, the guy was your owner for a quarter of a century. You don't mention him in the book.
Won six titles together.
There's obviously bad blood.
Six titles together.
Yeah, crazy bad blood. So, but let's listen to the other piece of audio from that interview that really stood out, which is when Belichick is being asked about his girlfriend who's not on camera on the main camera, but visible in it from a different camera. She just chimes in from across the room. This is awkward. This is all to set up an email that she released yesterday. Let's listen to this exchange.
Jordan was a constant presence during our interview.
You have Jordan right over there. Everybody in the world seems to be following this relationship. They've got an opinion about your private life. It's got nothing to do with them, but they're invested in it. How do you deal with that?
Never been too worried about what everybody else thinks. Just try to do what I feel like is best for me and what's right.
How did you guys meet?
Not talking about this.
No?
No.
No.
That's from across the room.
Wow. It's just...
Right?
Yeah.
So here's the latest in as the bill turns from yesterday. So Belichick's got this book, and his girlfriend yesterday released an email that Belichick had written. And it certainly appears to me that this is going to the publishers of the book because it looks like there's a disagreement on how to present things. So in the book at one point, John, this is wild, he mentions, and they don't specify which thing he's talking about. It could be Malcolm Butler. It could be anything from a Super Bowl. I don't know which it is. But from a Super Bowl, he is quoted as saying, "I effed up."
Whoa.
Now, we don't know what... I don't know as of now which instance in a Super Bowl he's talking about. It could be something against Eli Manning when they lost. Could be anything. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, it might be Malcolm Butler. Who knows, okay?
It's one of three, right?
Right? So Belichick admits, and again, the quote is, "I effed up." Okay. So take that for what it is. So Belichick is frustrated that the early go-round of publicity related to this book is focusing heavily on that sentence. And his point is not talking about all the other stuff I have in the book. So it's like, on one hand, Bill's got to understand, like, this is the way the world works. On the other hand, I will say this. I actually don't blame him as it relates to the publisher. He feels used by the publisher, I can tell.
Sure.
Because he's got, listen to this one passage he's got in here. And he's trying to tell the guys that are controlling the narrative of putting stuff, not the narrative media-wise, but even just the book people, he's frustrated. Listen to what he says here. He says at one point, "I will say again," this is from the email that she released. Now, that's a whole other issue, that she is now like girlfriend, publicist, defender, aggressor. Like, she's in a lot of roles here. So she releases this email that Belichick had sent on April 10th.
She releases the email on behalf of Bill Belichick?
You would assume so.
You
would assume she did it with his authorization, but it's just strange.
As his representative.
Pretty much.
She just might have blanket authorization to do what she wants it to.
Well, that's the thing. That would be beyond ridiculous.
How did this ever...
And I know, Rhea, you said yesterday you think a wellness check needs to be done on Belichick.
100%.
Yeah.
And that's possible.
This is concerning. That a man with this, I don't know, seemingly this much... concern about control. Like, as a coach, he was so focused on every minute detail. Everything had to be just so, a certain way.
Yeah.
And now someone from, you know, his personal life is coming in, and I've seen these videos where she's walking into the back of a huddle on the practice field
it's
and
insane.
Interrupting the coaching process taking place. And I'm thinking to myself, like, this man, this is so different than the man even 5 years ago.
I know.
I think someone should be concerned about where he is emotionally, where he is intellectually, where he is from a just a well-being sense.
It's really strange.
Brain-wise, like, what is going on in his head?
Look, you can also make I'll make this case, though. He used to have an infrastructure around him in New England that he no longer has. And he might be having people fill voids.
But he brought his own people to New. I mean, like some. Mike Lombardi's his GM. Some. Like, he brought people with him.
Some. But not the
university
full
has to be very concerned.
I would agree with that.
Oh, yeah, yeah, buddy.
All right, so listen to this part of the email that got released yesterday. And I actually am with Belichick on a lot of this. Here's what he says in the email. He says, I will say again that I want this book to be presented as a look at my professional life and how I did my job on the way up to and as the leader of an organization that grew from a $500 million franchise to an $8 billion organization that played in 10 and won 6 Super Bowls over 25 years. This book is about how I did my job and lessons from my 50 years in and around the NFL, not a bathroom book that highlights my mistakes. I acknowledge the mistakes in the book, but of course, I effed up is the catchphrase. I have at times, reluctantly, gone along with the title, cover, and language in the book. I am not going to be the conductor of a hype train in the book promotion. We have enough hype to work with. I hope we can get on the same page in promoting the book authentically. I actually don't blame him on that one. But again, I'll say this. There's a difference between how the publisher presents things to the outside world and how media members and fans choose to view it. Because obviously, I effed up is going to be a very juicy thing that people are going to grab onto when discussing the book.
Yeah, so, you put the book out.
He put it in the book.
I mean, you're putting the book out to the world, how people and media take your book.
That's up to them.
It's out of your hands,
1,000%.
So,
1,000%.
But you know, when that sentence is in there, it's salacious.
It is.
And it's going to get all the attention. Yeah. You know, that's where everyone's eyes are drawn immediately.
Question.
And it's going to be, written up.
You can tell he feels
disgust.
Used by the publisher, though, because they probably twisted his arm to put it in. Mm. And now he's like, all right, guys, I acquiesce to you, but now you're killing me here because now you're even part.
You're making me double down.
Yeah.
Man.
All right. So a lot there. A lot there with Belichick. If you want to weigh in, you can. 215-592-9494. You know, one thing that we touched on briefly yesterday, but it's worth a revisit, and then right to the phones. So, John, it is fascinating. George Kittle got a big old deal, man. And he and Goddard are about the same age. I'd have to look it up, but I think they came
Kittle's 31.
I think they came out 1 year apart.
He's 32, yeah.
Correct.
I think one was 2018. Wasn't Kittle 2017 draft?
I'm not sure about
Kittle
draft, but Kittle's
older.
I think
he's a
year or two older, somewhere in that range.
I mean, guys, he got
but
4 years.
But to be fair, yeah. Kittle, in the last 3 years, Goddard's missed three times as many games as Kittle.
100%. And Kittle is better.
Yeah.
Kittle is better. And
Kittle's better, yeah.
Kittle's better. But Goddard, I mean, Kittle got 4 years, $76 million, and not all of that's guaranteed, but he got a huge deal.
He
got a huge deal. Yeah. So it does complicate. I'll use that word, John. It complicates the Goddard thing. Because here's here's the irony of the Goddard thing. Goddard wants more money. The Eagles want to pay him less money.
If the Eagles wanted to get this done, they would have, struggled, striven to get it done before the Kittle deal. You know, they would have tried to get it in under, but again, the Kittle deal didn't move the needle that much. It was only, $100,000 over the previous.
Well, and Goddard's still the fifth highest tight end in terms of per year salary. Like this year, heading into this season, Goddard is the fifth highest paid tight end.
But James,
I know they don't want to pay him that salary. I'm just saying, he is in that range.
And
it's not like he's underpaid as a tight end.
But with no long-term security.
Yes. No, I get
and
it.
He's
I know.
Saying
I'm talking
that's
on
the
a
problem.
Annual basis.
And they're saying, you're getting what you deserve. You need to just go out there and prove it. Prove we can trust you. Prove you can stay healthy. Prove all that stuff. Therein lies the problem.
It's
there
wild.
Is no certainty attached to that, whatever he's owed for this year.
Yeah.
All right, $12.9 million.
Let's go to the phone. So it's just a lot happening, including a crazy Phillies game last night that they pulled out. But man, they made it an adventure to get there. Let's get to Jordan right now. Jordan, good morning.
Happy Wednesday, morning show. Happy Wednesday, Philadelphia.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, what's up, Jordan?
Joe, you told a great story yesterday about putting your feet on the carpet of the White House. And I got to tell you, I think that's why you have a cavity search every time you fly domestically. Now, I'm not saying that there's a...
Well, it wasn't just the...
He's on a list, is what you're saying,
Jordan.
Yeah.
Jordan, it wasn't just the White House; it was the Oval Office, man.
It was the Oval Office. The Oval Office.
That's what I do.
Show respect. Respect when respect is due. But when they send you that redress number for traveling, and they always pull you into screening, I think.
Yeah.
Well, I hear you.
Oh no!
Is that it?
Oh, there we go.
What?
your sportscasters, you have all this exposure and neat things. Like I'm a regular guy. I'm in Copenhagen at Noma, the world's best restaurant, with a kid. I get a standing ovation when I come in. I'm wondering, Rhea and John, what are the coolest moments you had because you guys are sportscasters and because you've had such longevity around the sports world? You know, the camera sneaks into the Oval Office. Well, what do you guys have to share?
Well, I'll say this for John. His coolest moment certainly wasn't as a talk show host. The guy played football.
Played in the Super Bowl, yeah. So that's a kind of cool moment.
Rhea, what's your coolest moment as a talk show host? What do you got as – what stood out to you?
Well, coolest moment like just in the biz that I got to interview, you know, in the locker room. I didn't – wasn't one-on-one. Michael Jordan and Shaquille O'Neal.
Wow. Together?
In their prime. No, not together.
Okay, separate, yeah.
No, when they would come in.
What was Jordan like?
Business-like. Shaq was the largest man I'd ever seen sitting down.
Yeah.
I mean, sitting down.
Yeah.
He was more massive than anybody else. It was insane.
Right.
But the funniest thing about the Jordan thing is that I got stopped going into the locker room because, you know, this was back in the Stone Ages when there weren't a lot of women around. And they said, this is only for media. And I go, I'm wearing the same thing that everybody else has, a credential.
Not a good job by that guy.
Yeah, it was not a good job.
No.
But that was pretty good for
you, Rhea. Hey, John, how about like a non-football moment? You know all these bands. You're a big music guy. Who took you backstage? You know, who did you meet that really thrilled you when people usually are thrilled to meet you?
Well, the guys from Green Day and the guys from Metallica, they were the biggest bands in the world.
Snoop Dogg.
Snoop, who brought an actual outfit that he had designed from his line for me because he appreciated the way I played. And, you know, I'm on the same team as some, you know, huge guy. Jerry Rice is on my team. You know, like, that was quite the honor that Snoop Dogg thought I was cool for the way that
that's
I play
awesome.
Football.
That's so cool.
It's nice to feel special every once in a while. I feel special watching the very public downfall of Bill Belichick happening live in front of our eyes. It's really going to be a sight to see over the next couple of weeks.
It's crazy.
A couple quick points on the Phillies. Last night, a tale of two Rojas. This guy misses a couple of plays in the field, yet goes 2-for-3 at the plate and is batting .278. Did he forget how to field and learn how to bat? I'm pretty impressed, a little intrigued, but I think that's a good sign for his viability.
Yeah. Well, it was wild, man. Jordan, give me an answer for the best speech ever in a movie. You can win the Elvis Costello tickets.
Did we give up when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor?
Oh,
no.
Yeah. That's a great answer,
great
man.
Answer.
That is a big-time answer right there from Animal House. All right, coming up in a minute, The tales of the twists and turns of the Phillies last night, which was a game if you missed it, I can't even describe to you, but I'll try my best how all over the place this game was. We'll get to that in 1 minute.
Mother's Day is coming soon on May 11th, and trust me, you don't want to miss it. It's also one of the busiest days of the year at restaurants. This year, skip the insanely busy, overpriced, fixed menus at the restaurant and show mom you love her with a homemade meal prepared by you from Wild Fork Foods. The Wild Fork Forkies can help you prepare an amazing meal for mom. You'll impress her with a variety of surf and turf options. Pick up Angus New York strip steak, only $13.48 per pound, or Brazilian beef tenderloin, only $10 per pound. And for the surf, how about two lobster tails for only $15.96, or extra large Argentine red shrimp? I mean, they are huge. For $11.50 a pound, I just did the jumbo lump crab cakes for Easter. They even have you covered for dessert with chocolate lava cakes, a couple different kinds. We love those. Creme brulee and their New York-style cheesecake. Make Mother's Day memorable with the help of Wild Fork. Visit their Neshaminy store or one of their other Greater Philadelphia locations or shop online for same-day delivery. Visit wildforkfoods.com today.
All right, great to have you with us on this Wednesday morning. Reminder, Andy Reid in about 1 hour, 8:45 today, Andy Reid to pay tribute to Brandon Graham. We got BG Day happening on Monday, and obviously Andy is the individual who drafted him a decade and a half ago. So Andy on Brandon Graham coming up 8:45 on the show. Let's also get to today's Twitter poll questions of the day, both brought to us by Armin Chevrolet. Armin Chevy, your Corvette headquarters. Have you dreamt about owning a Corvette? Well, now's the time. Visit ArmandChevy.com. Together, let's drive. First poll question, do you want Rick Tocchet to be the Flyers' next head coach? He's out as the coach of the Canucks. He walked away from Vancouver yesterday. Do you want Tocchet back in Philly as the Flyers' coach? Yes or no, you can vote at Sports Radio WIP on Twitter. Rhea says no because it's too much going back to the old Flyer stuff.
Yeah, it's just they got to stop doing it. I need new blood, new regime, all that kind of stuff.
I like to think he'd be different, you know, than Hexie and Berube and the other 77 million that have come
Can't
through.
Rinse and recycle.
James, where are you on Tocchet?
Can Bobby Clark come back or no?
He did a couple times.
I know, that's why I made the joke. Yeah,
Paul Holmgren. Else we got?
It's just unbelievable.
It really is pretty amazing. All right, so do you want Tocchet as the Flyers' next coach? I'll tell you this, it wouldn't shock me at all if it happens because
I would be shocked if it didn't happen, to be completely honest.
James, 100% with you.
All right, second poll question. Do you like Rob Thompson not having one set leadoff hitter? Obviously, he keeps flipping back and forth depending on who's a lefty and who's a righty pitcher. And that determines whether it's a Trey night or whether it's a Stott night or, of course, earlier in the season, whether it's a Schwarber night. So your thoughts on the leadoff thing as he flips back and forth, yes or no, you can vote on that. Now, with all that said, let's address last night's game. It was wild. Here's what I've got written down because there was a lot of good and there was a lot of bad. And the really good was really, really good. And the really bad was really, really bad. Here's the ledger as I see it of the main points. Really good. Zach Wheeler's pitching. The guy's a stud. He's an amazing pitcher. And he's gotten back on track after a little shaky at an earlier point of the year. He's one of the best pitchers in baseball. I was amazed to find out he had 50 strikeouts going into last night's game. I'm thinking, my God, last night was April 29th. He's already got 50 strikeouts? Yes, he's an amazing pitcher. All right, Trey, 4 hits in the leadoff hole. We had people yesterday saying you can't lead off Trey because you got to put in Schwarber, put him back, stop him. Gillio was saying that in the midday. Schwarber's got to lead off. He's not hitting in the 3-hole or the 4-hole. Well, Trey last night had 4 hits. Schwarber had a home run right out of the gate. So both of them did their job in their respective spots from a hitting standpoint. Rojas' hitting was great. I mean, he made, boom, nice job getting on base, spot him in the ninth to jumpstart that ninth inning. That was K. Now let's talk about the bad. There were 2 bads that were so monumental, it's hard to describe. One is the defense up the middle of Trey Turner and Rojas, who both had 2 disastrous plays, which is a huge part of how this game got so close. And the Phillies ultimately did not have the lead entering the bottom of the ninth. I mean, John, Rojas's center field miscues were
just...
It looked like a little leaguer. It looked like a high school guy that misplays the
play.
Because you see that in schools.
Of course, yeah.
I thought he was good at tracking the ball. I thought he was able to get to anything. We've seen him do a nice job of judging that thing, but it was horrendous.
It was horrible.
Again,
mental mistakes.
Yeah, a guy just hits and he can't field. It's what we've always said about him.
And then Trey, exactly. And then Trey's defense was on par for what he does.
It was,
he's just a bad defensive
shortstop.
But
for Trey, he saw the hell out of the ball offensively. Like,
I get that, but
so
man.
So did Rojas. They were two of the most important offensive players.
Why can't you see it when you got a glove on? Like a big glove.
So the game gets super close late because of Trey's defense and Rojas' defense has hurt them. The other big negative in the game was the bullpen.
No doubt.
So I don't want to get on Strom too much. He only gave up the one hit, but it's another inherited runner scored. You like to have that 3-1 lead stay a 3-1 lead, but it becomes 3-2 because he gives up a Wheeler-inherited run. So, okay, you got the Strom moment. You got Alvarado. He gets both good and bad last night. He dances out of it. But also, the bases were loaded.
You load the base with no outs.
Yeah.
You're not always going to strike out the side in that situation.
Correct. Now, one of those things, to be fair, was the Trey defensive play.
Was the Trey, yep.
But, Alvarado, I still feel shaky on. That's just me. And then there's Kerkreen. And so it's like, Trey and Rojas both hurt Kerkreen and put him in a hole. But with that said, Kerkreen's the one that gives up a 3-run home run. And now entering the bottom of the ninth, my team doesn't even have the lead. Forget the other team has come back and tied it. The other team has come back and taken the lead. So it was
just... The bullpen, I think, is the biggest thing with this team.
Oh, man.
Can I add one more bad, though? Because we haven't talked about it much. And I think it's getting to the point where we got to at least mention it.
Yep.
Bryce Harper's been bad, man.
I know.
Harper has been bad. 1-for-4 again last night. His average is down to .231, and he's looked lifeless for a while.
His body language is awful.
Yeah, like for weeks.
He's looked out of whack.
He has looked out of it, and this guy's supposed to be the leader of this club. Like, I get it.
Not playing that
way. But he's got to play better.
I agree. I totally agree. So we'll take your reaction on everything with the Phils last night. There's a lot in there. 215-592-9494. Let's give you how it ended. Literally, the two final sequences of the game. It may be the first time ever it ended with back-to-back plays at home plate. I don't know. Maybe it's happened before. I certainly don't remember it. So with everything that had gone on, the Phillies were down a run. They've got Rojas at the plate. They've got Bohm on third. What you're going to hear is a sack fly, but believe me when I tell you, if the catcher catches the ball, Bohm's going to be out and the game's going to be over, but he actually tied it.
Finnegan ready. He kicks, and the pitch swung on, hit in the air to right field. It's not very deep. Cruz getting under it near the line. He makes the catch. Bohm tags. He's coming home. And the throw. He is safe. The ball got away at the plate.
Crazy.
Alec Bohm scores, and the game is tied 6-6 here in the bottom of the ninth.
I mean, John, I thought Bohm was going to be out, and if the catcher catches the ball, he's out.
Should have been out. Yeah. Would have easily been out.
And that's the end of the game if he's out.
The ball's just caught.
Yeah, that's it.
The ball is there. The catcher just needs to make the play and make the tag and does not. And we really did sort of luck out by the skin of our teeth, but hey, tied it up.
Right.
And great job of doing your part, Alec Bohm, I guess.
Part of.
So earlier in the game, he did swing early.
Well, I would hope he hustled in that situation.
I know, but slowly, but like
yeah,
for
his
himself,
hustle,
he was
moving
quick.
Joe could beat him.
Well, I probably could beat
if
him.
If you're
in
not
a
hustling in that spot,
yeah.
Cut him on
Look,
the spot.
Part of baseball at times is forcing the other team to make the play. Mm-hmm. And the bottom line is Bohm and Dusty Wathan, third base coach, they went with the, yeah, I might be out, but let's see if the right fielder and catcher both make
but
their plays.
The thing.
And they didn't.
He should
oh,
not
you had
have
to tag
been
there.
Out. Holy
well,
cow.
Well, you didn't have to because Trey was 4-for-4
no,
and coming up
I
next.
I know, but
you didn't have to.
You're tagging right. There. I think 99.999% of the time the player tags
I don't
tags
know,
it.
Man. That was not very deep. But anyway, you got away with it. And then it was like two or three pitches later with Trey up. Stott scampers home.
The stretch by Finnegan and the 2-0 in the dirt, and there's a stop. Here comes Stott. He'll score.
Wild.
The ball got away up the first baseline. Bryson Stott with a mad dash for the plate, dives head first, and the Phillies have won it on a walk-off wild pitch. 7-6, the Phillies win in the bottom of the ninth inning.
I'll say this, it's hard to remember. You know, once you get about a month into the year, it's hard to remember all the games, but I find it very hard to believe that there was a more nutso Phillies game this year. I mean, that had a lot of everything. So they pulled
That's
out.
So awesome. Finishing head first with the win, the kamikaze win. Yeah. And Zach Wheeler said afterwards, that's what good teams do. I hope good teams continue to do that against bad teams, which that was last night.
You know what I want, John?
And good teams. Do it against the bad teams and the good teams.
Yeah.
And I'll believe you.
Here's where I'm at. Just get me back to a 5-2 Zach Wheeler win. Like, Zach Wheeler does his job,
nice.
Gives you his 6-7, bullpen comes
well,
in.
He was
like
dominant
that.
Again.
You know, it was on its way to like a 5-2 win, and then all hell broke loose.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to the phones. We're also going to get, coming up shortly, Mike Mayock on some of the Eagles draft picks, and also Roger Goodell on the Tush Push. Reminder, Andy Reid in an hour. Big Red at 8:45 today coming on WIP. Let's get to Paul right now. Paul, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. So, you know, I think that game last night was a microcosm of the team. I mean, first of all, the plate appearances were, I'm going to use a word for you, John, anemic. They are hard to watch. They are boring. And then the defense showed who they were. The relief pitching showed who it was. And I don't know how anybody thinks this team's going to go anywhere with this lineup the way it's playing. I mean, it's hard to watch this baseball team. That's the first point. Second point, Bill Belichick. Dude, it's a tale as old as time. Vitamin V, that's what's going on with this guy. I mean, he's got a new life, a new girlfriend. She's treating him right. Oh, my goodness. This guy is off his rocker. Three.
By the way, by treating him right, I think you're talking about one thing and not all the other things, right?
That's exactly what I'm talking about.
I just want to make sure we're on the same page.
Okay. Yep. Joe, anytime you want to use the house in Longport,
Ooh.
You are more than welcome. We'll put you on the third floor.
Ooh.
Got a view to the right of the bay, a view to the left of the ocean, your own bathroom, which I know is important to you.
It's important to you. Trust me. It's not important to me.
I don't know that you want that.
It's also important to me.
In any capacity,
Rhea,
Paul.
Rhea's gone off camera with laughing at that one.
Yeah.
You're so considerate, Joe.
Yeah. Well, it's more for my wife than anything else. We'll put you in your own spot. I actually had a speech. It's the same actor. I actually gave a different one to Seltzer. One's for Joe, one's for John. John, I'm going to give the one for Joe because I think it might be a winning answer. Same actor, so you'll figure out who the other is. But Michael Douglas, Andrew Shepherd, you have a bone to pick, Bob.
Mm-hmm.
Pick it with me. Sidney Alcide is out of your league.
Yeah, it's a tremendous, tremendous thing from the movie was the presidential thing.
American President.
Love
that movie.
Yeah. Without American President, there's probably no West Wing.
Really?
Yeah. Aaron Sorkin wrote it, and then he wrote The West Wing after.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, exactly right. All right, Jihad Campbell, first-round pick for the Eagles on Thursday. So Mike Mayock was on with the afternoon show earlier this week and covered a lot of ground, one of which, of course, is, you know, what position is Jihad Campbell going to play? I mean, John, we were initially thinking inside linebacker. Then people are talking edge. Mayock broke it down in a really interesting way. Here's Mike Mayock on Jihad Campbell.
When you get interchangeable pieces that can do more than one thing, there's true value attached to that. So this is a guy that your base defense can sit and play off the ball linebacker. He's got great speed. He can play pass coverage, both man-to-man and zone. I'd like to see him a little heavier coming downhill and in heavy run game stuff. But he can also stay on the field in all your sub packages, and maybe that's where he's going to be his best. He can rush inside on the A-gap. You can put his hand in the dirt and put him outside at the nine technique and let him play a defensive end or a 3-4 outside linebacker. Does he need to develop as an edge rusher? Yes. He didn't do that primarily at Alabama, but when he had the opportunity, he took advantage, and he did. That's what he was in high school. So I think for a creative defensive coordinator, and that's what the Eagles have, there's a real opportunity to use this kid and develop him in a variety of ways.
You know, I'll be very interested, John, to find out if Fangio does that with Campbell. And here's the reason I say that. So Cooper DeJean obviously could play all these positions defensively in the defensive backfield. But last year he was the slot guy. Like, it felt to me like they said, hey, rookie, just handle that. We're not going to move you around the outside corner and safety. Like, just
not put too much on his plate.
Exactly.
So, I think what he plays next year might not be what he's playing.
That's possible. Because, John, when I look at guys in New England that Belichick had, like McGinnis and Bruschi and all these chess pieces that he used, Vrabel, in very creative ways, like, are they going to do that with Jihad Campbell year one? I mean, I don't know. I just know they didn't with Cooper DeJean year one. At least I don't think they did. It seemed to me Cooper DeJean was slot corner guy. That's what it was.
It's just, man, this really is a mystery.
It is a mystery.
When I think about it from my own personal experience perspective, you know, like you could say that John Ritchie guy, we could use him the way we did in high school, and we can hand him the ball 25 times every game.
Right.
I wouldn't get anywhere. I wouldn't get anywhere in the NFL being handed the ball 25 times a game like I did in high school.
Well, you had developed a different skill set.
Absolutely. Yeah. The skill set. I hadn't done that since high school. So it had been 5 years since I'd even been in the open field with the ball in my hands, I think.
Right. And Brian Westbrook, and I'm handing him the ball.
Everyone's better. Everyone surpasses you. Yeah. Like, if my skill set is that of a high school running back, then okay, yeah, good. I'm good at that level. Like, I hope that Jihad Campbell isn't good at that level. You know, I hope that we're not overestimating, because this is what he was so great at coming out as a high schooler, that he's still capable of doing it at the NFL level, because it really is a massive jump.
Yeah, I mean, let's put it this way. I'm sure there's examples in the past, but I can't remember them. Until Cooper DeJean last year, and of course that was a second round pick, and now Jihad Campbell this year, I don't remember a high first round or second round pick where we literally don't even know what position he's going to play. Now, on one hand, that's a good thing that you have versatility.
It really is unprecedented.
It's weird.
The versatility now that is expected of these players in the middle who can do all sorts of things. Like, it really does make it like an individual case by case scenario
right.
for every team, for every player, because yeah. they are so different.
So we're
and what their job descriptions are so different,
no
what
question.
They're asked to do.
More on Jahyd Campbell from Mayock coming up in a few minutes, because he also talked about the injury situation. Very interesting audio from Mayock on Jahyd Campbell's injury stuff. We'll get to that just in the next couple minutes. Reminder, not only YouTube for our show where you can see it, but the app. I don't want people to lose sight of the app. If you've never downloaded the app, get it. Right there on your phone. Super easy to get. And then you can listen to our show anywhere in, like, you know, the world. So make and even something like the Andy Reid interview. Like, if you miss it today when he's on at 8:45, go back later today, afternoon, nighttime, listen to that Andy Reid interview. It'll be on the app if you got to get into work before 8:45. All right, let's go to the phones. Let's talk to Zach in Medford right now. Zach, good morning.
Good morning, everyone. My voice is absolutely shot this morning, just for context. I won the tickets for yesterday's game, so I was there.
I didn't think about
inning,
that. That was the tickets we gave. Yeah. What a fun game to go to.
Zach, what a nutso game, man.
First off, that ninth inning, absolute cinema. I can't believe that I bore witness to that. I mean, that was just such an incredible ending. Absolutely insane. The bank was absolutely wild. I'm losing breath right now.
I get it, man. Look, it was a big lead that turned into a deficit that turned into a walk-off wild pitch win.
Being in a walk-off win, and I mean, Richie still talks about the Michael Franco walk-off, yeah. and that was when they stunk.
Electric.
You know? It's electric.
Michael Franco.
It's one of the coolest things you could be in a building for. Yeah.
It is cool.
Win.
Yep.
I mean, it was the best game I never paid for. Absolutely grateful and thankful.
Yeah.
Which is absolutely wild. To get more negative, I'm absolutely exhausted of hearing about these hundreds of million dollar players getting in the lab and working on things.
Yeah.
Like, they were paid, they were given contracts under the expectation that they didn't need to work on this, get in the lab. I'm pissed off at Trey Turner, especially. Bryce Harper just looks absolutely spiritless. And I'm sick and tired of hearing this constantly.
Look, you bring up a lot of good points, man. I mean, I hear you. Look, Bryce's hitting will probably work itself out, I think, but Trey's defense will not. Trey is a bad defensive shortstop, and it's going to be on the Phillies. I want to be really clear about this.
Could he be a good
if the Phillies,
outfielder?
Could well,
he be
sure,
a good
potentially?
Potentially.
But let's deal with the here and now. Now,
yeah.
It will be on the Phillies if they lose in October. Or do not get to October because of Trey Turner's defense. And guys, let me tell you something. This team ain't going to waltz to the playoffs. If they make it, they're going to make it by a couple games. If they miss it, they're going to miss it by a couple games. His defense could be the difference in what otherwise might have the chance with this starting pitching. I'll say it. I know a lot of people aren't thinking it right now. They could win a championship. They have talent that can win a championship. But his defense is a disaster. And it's on them that they didn't move him in the offseason. Because you're not doing it right now. You're not saying April 30th. Hey,
you're not moving him now.
Go grab
you're
an
not.
Outfield glove.
You're not
doing that right now. Because you saw Rojas, who's played a million games in the outfield, not at the big league level, but high school, college, the pros. He misplayed two balls last night. Imagine putting Trey Turner out there.
I mean, think about Sosa. They haven't done it again.
No.
You know, they haven't put it back out there.
I remember when Juan Samuel was moved to the outfield years ago, and it wasn't good.
No.
And it takes time. Look, guys, do it. Robin Yount, infield, outfield. Pete Rose, infield, outfield. You can do it, but you don't want to do it in the middle of a season. Zach, give me an answer for the best speech ever in a movie.
I'm going William Wallace.
Has already been said.
Oh, no.
I'm sorry. I took that one.
Oh, come on, Devin. You're killing me here.
Great minds.
Let's go. Absolutely. Let's go with Colonel Jessup, A Few Good Men.
Ooh, now, that's...
So that, I mean, the courtroom's not a speech. You could argue the I eat breakfast is a speech.
More
you could,
of it.
You could say a courtroom's a speech.
Yeah, that's a back, because it's a back and forth. It's a back and forth.
It could be a soliloquy in
it's
a courtroom.
Yeah.
John, think of it this way. This gets said.
I want the truth!
This gets said.
Okay. You can't handle the truth!
That's not a speech.
Okay. No.
I agree with you. Yeah, that's back and forth. That's not a speech.
Quick to the point you were just making. They are tied for the third wild card spot today. Something we haven't talked about. Braves. They're back. They're only two games behind the Phillies. Shocking. They've been playing really good baseball, and that all of a sudden, right back in it.
Yeah, and of course, the conundrum is three good teams, we think. Three good teams in the NL East, three good teams in the NL West.
Maybe four in the West.
So they're going to have to scrap to make the
playoffs. And the Reds have the same record as the Phillies. They got Terry Francona. They're like kind of upstarty, too.